The Senate Revenue and Finance Committee. I am the temporary acting chair. We're here today to have a public hearing on Senate Bill 39 and to report on the activities of the subcommittee that was appointed by our chair. And that subcommittee has included myself and Representative Tom... Butler. And also sometimes Representative McPherson also got involved. Chris has been our staff, and Chris will relay what the amendments basically do and answer questions, and then we'll hear from anybody in the audience that wants to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the changes, I'm just going to highlight them. And kind of a macro perspective, and then I'll touch on the section by section changes. So the theme of the changes were that in section one, the REIT and RIC definitions are included in a listing transaction, but only if those transactions lack economic substance. So that narrows the definition of the transactions that would be considered a listed transaction.
So this is very important. The regulated investment companies and the real estate investment trusts are only included if they were constituted purely for the purpose of avoiding taxes.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And with respect to the REITs, if you recall, last session the Assembly passed and was signed into law Senate Bill 31, which essentially address that issue for tax years 2006 moving forward. So this is included here to get to older tax years, which we'll get to in a minute. Another significant change in the bill is that material advisors and promoters of these transactions are no longer required to report separately to the Department of Revenue. The penalty structure is greatly simplified. Right now there are several sections that deal with a layer of penalties, and the amendments will simplify that so simply to a 60% penalty for the underpayment of tax due to a listed transaction as defined in Section 1. And it takes effect for transactions discovered or reported on or after January 1, 2008.
And again, listed transactions are those that are listed by the federal government as illegal.
Correct, Mr. Chair. That's the base, and then the two additions that we've made are the REIT and RIC transactions. But you're correct, that the starting point is the IRS definition, so that's a known list that's out there. And the fourth major change was that there is a new penalty for a failure to report a reportable transaction to the Department of Revenue. Currently, taxpayers are required to report any reportable transaction that they conduct to the Department of Revenue, but there is no penalty for not doing so. This simply adds a penalty for the failure to report those transactions.
And you'll notice down there in new section 8A, it specifies what those penalties would be. What we did, or what we're recommending, is that they be set at one-third of the penalty level with the feds. And the reason for that is that top tax rate in Oregon is approximately 9%, and which is about one-third of what the top federal tax rate is. So we made our penalties one-third of the amount as well.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I just wanted to walk through section by section pretty quickly to highlight the technical aspects of those changes. Section 1, the only change is references, that because the sections will change under the new bill, under the amendments. Section 2, it adds the definition of non-economic substance transaction, which is defined as any transaction or arrangement that lacks economic substance, including a transaction or arrangement for which the taxpayer cannot demonstrate a business purpose other than tax savings. So that, as Mr. Chair, as you indicated, it restricts those types of REIT and RIC transactions that are considered listed transactions. Section 3, the listed transaction reference is replaced with a reportable transaction. Sections 4 through 7 are deleted. Section 8 simply changes the 40% to 60% and specifies that the penalty takes effect for transactions discovered or reported on or after January 1, 2008. So the effect of this is it gives taxpayers the rest of this year to come forward and pay any tax or penalty under the existing structure, and if they don't do so by December 31st, 2007, they face a stricter penalty in 2008. So that's how that works. Mr. Chair, new Section 8 does identify, as you indicated, those new penalties, which are a third of the federal levels. Sections 9 through 11 are deleted. Section 12 is unchanged. Section 13, the only change is to section references. Sections 14 through 17 are deleted. And then on Section 18, they delete the reference to a reportable transaction. And then 19 is deleted, and Section 20 is no change, and 21, again, only reference changes. And then Sections 22 through 30 are deleted. Now, those sections contain, there's a tax amnesty in there that's deleted, and there's a withholding piece related to employer-provided pensions is deleted. And there was a piece about the department allowing the Department of Revenue to share information to local governments, and that has been deleted, and that was actually part of an earlier bill.
Another bill that we already passed. Right. Other questions for staff? Okay. In that case, is there anybody in the public that would like to be heard on the amendments to Senate Bill 39? Anybody want to testify?
Senator?
Yes.
Senator Chair with the gavel.
Senator Starr.
we don't actually have a legislative council amendment. We're just going off of this.
That's right.
And has anybody in the public actually seen this before?
Jody
has. 5 minutes ago.
Are you going to vote on this bill?
No. We don't have the amendments back from LC yet. They're still working on them. So all we have is kind of the outline of the proposal, and the chair does not want to move this bill today. He wanted, we couldn't move it today because we don't have the amendment. He just wanted the committee to be briefed on the direction we're going, to make sure that the committee is comfortable with the direction we're going, not doing a tax amnesty, but using this approach of increasing penalties after a few months, and also specifying what particulars are illegal activities. It's very narrowly defined. We tried to keep it as narrow and as simple as possible, to only those transactions which are specified by the federal government as illegal, and to those reportable transactions, the writs and the REITs, that are for the purpose, only for the purpose of avoiding taxes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Do we have a revenue impact on the amendments?
I have not put together a revenue impact yet. We're still figuring out which direction Senate Bill 39 was going to go, so
okay.
I have not yet put together a revenue impact.
Is it your assumption that the revenue impact will be positive, producing more revenue?
Yes.
Or
absolutely. That would be the direction.
Okay. That's the whole purpose of it.
Exactly. I just want that on the record, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions? Is there anybody that would like to testify? Not seeing anybody jump up. Anything else we need to do?
Senator, we had on our agenda Senate Bill 460. Has
yes.
that bill been pulled? Or
Mr. Warner?
I need to close the hearing.
Yeah, let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 39. Thank you. Okay, what do you want me to do? Go over them?
You can take testimony if you want. Nobody's seen. I don't know who's seen the amendments.
Are you prepared to explain the amendments?
Sure.
Okay. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 460. Mr. Meyer is going to explain some of the amendments that have been proposed.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 460, as you will recall, dealt with the unused value on gift cards and when that value would become abandoned property. You have in your packet several amendments that have been offered on the bill. I'd like to look at Senate Bill 460-2, Amendment First. That was from the Department of State Lands. That was to help identify who had access to the unused value, so that it says that if the last known address of the owner of the gift card is unknown, then it's presumed abandoned if the last transaction by the owner of the gift card occurred in Oregon. So that's to help clarify which state has legal access to it as abandoned property. The other amendments deal with the definition of gift card, that the gift card is defined on the first page in sub 6 on line 17. The dash 1 amendment would insert purchased after the A, so it would get it would read a gift card means a purchased, pre-funded, etc. The intent of that was to clarify that if gift cards were given out for whatever reason, that they would not be included in these provisions. Then the other two also deal with the definition. The dash 4, also in that same line, line 17 on the first page, after record would insert sold or purchased at retail. And then the dash 5, also dealing with the definition. Let's see, in line 22, at the end of the definition language, would insert any gift card usable for more than one seller or of goods or services. So that last line in the definition says gift card does not include. And so this language then would exclude a gift card that was usable for more than one business. So if it was like a mall card that was usable for all of the businesses in that mall, I think the intent of this language is to exclude that kind of gift card.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Meyer?
Yes.
Senator?
Can you further explain the dash fives?
The dash five adds to the line that excludes the prepaid telephone calling cards or the prepaid commercial mobile radio services, and then it adds to that the language, the gift card usable with more than one seller of goods and services. So the card that isn't just a gift card for a particular business, but a gift card that could be used at multiple businesses.
So to clarify this, all the changes are grammatical to make it clear that we're excluding any gift card usable with more than one seller of goods or services. The other punctuation changes are just
correct.
Grammatical.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Are there proponents that have... I'm sorry, too. I have to apologize to the committee because I missed the original hearing on this bill. So I'll lay that as a foundation. I missed the original discussion. But are there proponents for each of these?
Yeah, the bankers and others that came in that had concern that the bill as drafted was too broad might include things like debit cards that can have general use and so on, came in and asked for several of these amendments. I had one of them drawn up, and basically they wanted to make sure that we narrowed the scope the way it was intended. Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, the dash 4 and the dash 5 were both from the same source. I don't know if one was intended to be in place of the other or not.
Okay. But you'll look at those before we act on this and see how they mesh, whether we need all of them or just some of them.
Correct.
Or yeah, okay.
So like, and I
Senator Starr, go
appreciate
ahead.
The opportunity here, but the dash five, so like Washington Square, for instance, you can buy a gift card that's good in all of the Washington Square stores, and that's what this is.
It would be exempt.
Would be exempt.
Under the dash five. Any other questions? Okay. Do I open a public hearing? How much time do we have before the House throws us out?
We're already in public hearing, aren't we?
We've had one public hearing, yes.
No, and we're in public hearing now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're in public hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
We're public hearing and work session.
Okay, but there are insufficient votes to. Do you want me to act on amendments?
No.
Do you know which amendments we need, how they mesh together? Okay, I don't think we're ready to. We better wait. Okay.
We have a public hearing.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Starr.
It might be helpful to me at least, and I apologize for missing the original hearing, if proponents of the various amendments could come and.
Okay. Come forth, announce yourselves, and give us your wisdom. I think I did open a public hearing, but if I didn't, I'll open it again.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and we are one of the requesters on this bill. I am sorry, Senator Starr, that you were not here for the first hearing, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have about how the bill works. In answer to the question, how do these amendments work, they are each independent, and they are meant to address a specific problem, and so we hope that they will all be adopted. The amendment, the Dash 4 amendment that you were talking about earlier, is meant to deal with the issue that the Oregon Restaurant Association mentioned in their testimony, and that is that they offer gift cards as promotional items in many cases. And it was never our intent to capture a gift card that was given to someone as a promotional item, a free gift. We're only trying to capture those which are paid for. And so that's the purpose of the Dash 4 amendment, is to make clear that we are only talking about purchased gift cards.
Senator George?
So it would exclude a card, for example, Circuit City. Last year we bought a computer. And when you bought the computer, you got a gift card worth $150. Is it excluded?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I hadn't thought about that particular situation. I would think if you didn't pay for the card, it would be a free card and a promotional item that comes with the purchase of something. If you go to a restaurant and buy a meal and as a thank you they give you a gift card to go give to your buddy, I would think that is not, with the Dash 4 amendments, those would not be included.
That'd be my understanding, too. Good to get that on the record, Senator George. Any other questions? Trish? Okay.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Lori Wimmer-Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. We, too, support, as one of the requesters, all of the amendments before you. One of the other instances in which the Dash 1s, for example, are useful is that some of the testimony from the business community was that they often give cards as auction items for charities or those kinds of things, and we wanted to make sure that it was only purchase cards. Once again, the idea is for the consumer who has cash on the table to have that value protected. We're not trying to do anything that would otherwise disadvantage businesses that are just trying to do something like promotional charitable giving. And I think also Department of State Lands has one of the amendments here. I think that would be the second one, -2s. Mm-hmm. And I'll ask that they address the reason for that one. That has to do with determination of ownership of the card. So I think that we've tried to be as responsive to the concerns that were made part of the original record on this bill as possible so that we can do something that earns revenue for the Common School Fund, protects consumers, and yet also doesn't disadvantage the business community. Thank you.
Okay.
Are we limiting our comments to the amendments, or?
You can comment on the bill as well, since Senator Starr wasn't here for the original comments.
Thank you, Senator Starr. I'm Otto Schell with the Oregon PTA. We're in broad support of this bill. We also think that the amendments as proposed make a lot of sense to clarify the things that were brought up in the hearings and subsequent discussions, and we'll let DSL explain their part of the amendment. We were not directly involved in the drafting of the amendments, but we believe that they fix many of the challenges that were raised.
Okay, can we hear from DSL?
And, Mr. Chair, while we're waiting for them to come up, I will offer that if it is the Chair's pleasure, we're happy to go through the major points of the bill again.
Well, we'll see what Senator Starr wants. I'd be, if we have sufficient support, I think it would be wise then for us today to go ahead and pass these amendments and then set the bill over so it could come back to us as amended for final action when the Chair is here. That be reasonable? Okay. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Jeanette Holman from the Department of State Lands. With me is Cindy Wickham, who is the manager of the Unclean Property Program. The amendments in SB 460-2 are intended to make it clear that in the absence of a known address, there's a certain line of cases, and in our statutes we already deal with cashier's checks or traveler's checks, excuse me, which are very similar to these, and they have, if they don't have a known address, it's a transactional analysis, and that's the same language that we have applied here, so that if someone comes in and purchases a gift card and they don't have that address, rather than the company reporting to the state of incorporation, they report to Oregon as the last known address, or because of this transactional analysis, with the thinking being that if the transaction occurred in Oregon, that's the most likely place where someone will come looking for this gift card.
Okay, questions?
I have a hard question.
Go ahead, Senator.
I am having a hard time wrapping my brain around this, and I apologize again for the committee, and I appreciate the committee taking time, and I guess we'll leave when the House comes back. But I'm given a card to Men's Warehouse for my birthday. My mom and dad give it to me, $50, whatever it is. It gets lost, you know, in the bottom of my sock drawer, and I'm never to be seen again. How does DSL know, I'm assuming after a certain amount of time, this bill, if it were enacted, that $50 would go into the pot of money that's, you know, and I guess track the money for me. I don't understand how the money moves. I mean, does Men's Warehouse, because they sold this thing, do they have to send the DSL $50? And then at some point in time, I get if this bill passes, and you know, I can log into their website and say, oh yeah, there's that $50 that mom and dad gave me 5 years ago. I just don't understand how the money moves. It doesn't make any sense to me. And how would DSL know that it's my $50 and not my parents' $50?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, when you would your parents purchase the gift card, if they paid cash, sometimes they'll ask for a phone number, which would indicate who the purchaser is. If they don't, if they just pay cash, then that's when these amendments would go into effect. And what we would require is that Men's Warehouse would have to do due diligence to try and find you or to notify you that this money has not been claimed. If they don't find you, then they give us a report and has that amount on it, and presumably these gift cards are traceable with a number.
Can I just interrupt you?
Okay.
They have to find me as the person who received the ultimate gift, or they have to find my folks?
They would be looking for your folks.
Okay.
And then they can turn it over with that number. If you find the gift cards 5 years from now, you can come to us and we will have that record of the number that was sold. If you don't find the gift card, but your name shows up on our website, then what we would ask is that you provide some evidence, you know, a statement from your parents that they purchased that gift card for you, something like that. And Cindy's probably a better person to tell you the kinds of evidence.
But what we're setting up is a requirement really on business to report unclaimed gift cards unclaimed gift cards, unutilized gift cards.
That's correct. Along with all the other unclaimed property that they report. Because right now they report credit balances, they report uncashed payroll checks, all kinds of things that they already report. This would just be one more category of reporting that they would do.
And there was a time period, was it 2 years? What's the time period in the bill that triggers?
It's a three-year period. After they hold it for 3 years,
okay,
without any contact with the customer, then yep, they turn it over to us.
And then if you can't find that person or nobody claims it, it goes into the unclaimed property account and ultimately, come on up, Senator Westman. Senator Westman's bill, so he can probably answer that.
Well, I think what would is easily understandable, what would transpire under this bill is that businesses at the time of sale would then do an appropriate job of identifying, taking the information. I mean, they're taking your money. So it's a small step at that juncture to, you know, identify the purchaser or who the card was, if it was intended for a gift. I don't think it becomes a burden on the back end when all of a sudden the reporting period is here. Oh, and now the business has to go through all these hoops to find who this was so they can report it to DSL. I think it's an easy administrative function on the front end of this, something they don't do now. But, you know, let's characterize this. I mean, if using your example, Senator Starr, if your parents give you, just a happy birthday card with $50 in it, and you lose it, the bill, you've lost the money. That's kind of shame on you. If your parents go to Men's Warehouse, give them $50, get the card, you take it, it's given to you, you never use it, that $50 is not lost. It's still in the care, custody, and control of, in this case, Men's Warehouse or whatever business entity. You know, they are, at that juncture, enriched by a failure of you to act, not, any failure on your parents' part or even your part. That's the key question here. If I'm walking down the street and I lose $50 out of my wallet and you find it, I'm not happy, but it was, that's shame on me. If I go to Men's Warehouse or any, Home Depot or whomever, give them $50 with the stated, almost implied contract that, okay, I'm giving you money so I can come in and use it later. Now with these expiration dates, all of a sudden that goes away. That's still money. Where does it go?
Yeah, and I'm getting the word that we're going to need to wrap this up.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. This has been helpful. And I appreciate that.
And the chair who's in the building and who's sending me proxy would like us to not take any action on the amendments or the bill today, set it all over. Sounds like we're going to need to amend it with all of these amendments, and then we'll see where the votes are.
And
Senator Westman.
If I could encourage OSEA and OEA to work with, on Senator George's comment, because, I mean, we've already addressed the free bono promotional card.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's no money changing hands in. I'm
right.
Not very worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm worried about is a consumer protection issue where consumers have, you know, forked over. It's millions upon millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah.
If I'm getting a card with a, you know, $500 purchase for $100, you know, credit, I got no beef with that. That's great.
What, wasn't the evidence that something like 20-25% of these cards are never redeemed? I think we had testimony, something in that neighborhood.
Mr. Chair, I think it's about 10%.
10%, okay.
And what it is, you know, markets are wonderful things. And as, you know, the gift card market started to expand and evolved, people go in, it became more desirable to the consumer, more companies responded, properly so, to the gift card market. So they started issuing gift cards, you know, without expiration dates on them. That was the initial thrust. And so what happens to that money? Bruce, or Senator Starr's question. So at that juncture, it functionally goes into what is best described as an accounts payable. They can never use the money, but they benefit from the interest. Okay, no beef there. As a given percent of these cards were not being claimed, they're going, hey, we just don't want that, you know, large reservoir of capital tied up, we'll put expiration dates on it. So then when that day rolls over, it comes out of the functioning accounts payable directly, you know, to their bottom line. You know, something just doesn't strike me as fair about that. I don't blame the companies.
Mr.
I understand.
Senator George.
I hate to interrupt you, Senator, but it isn't the real point of this bill to take that money and put it in our bottom line, put it in the state treasury. That's what this bill is really about.
Actually, only the interest.
Correct.
Could be used.
That the corpus is then protected for the original issuer of that, of those funds. The interest is the only the interest is then used for the benefit of the
schools or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to call this to a close. Thank you very much. Thanks for sticking with me, guys. And we will adjourn the meeting of the Senate Revenue and Finance Committee.